Aban smiled to the Greenlanders as he limped through the village on his camel-headed crutch. They stared at him, many mistrustful, but while his crutch was an invitation for violence against him in Krasia, it seemed to have the opposite effect among the Chin. They would be ashamed of themselves to hit a man who could not properly defend himself, just as they were ashamed to hit a woman. It explained why their women took such liberties. Aban found he liked the Greenlands more and more as time went by. The weather was neither unbearably hot nor unbearably cold, whereas the desert held both extremes. And there was abundance in the north like nothing Aban had ever dreamed. The possibilities for profit were endless. Already, his wives and children were making a fortune in Everim's bounty, and most of the Greenlands were as yet untapped. In Krasia, he was wealthy, but still only considered half a man. In the north, he could live like a Damaji. Not for the first time, Aban wondered at Aman's true thoughts. Did he truly believe himself the deliverer, and that such things as marrying this woman were Everim's will? Or was that just a pretense for power? If it were any other man, Aban would have thought the latter, but Aman had always been naively true about such things, and might well harbor such delusions of grandeur. It was ridiculous, of course, but the belief in his divinity shared by almost every man, woman, and child in Krasia gave Aman such tremendous power that it almost didn't matter if it was true or not. By the way, Aban served the most powerful man in the world, and if they had not returned to their old friendship, they had at least fallen into its patterns. The Damaja, and Aban was far too skilled a manipulator not to know another one on sight. Anevera twisted Aman to her own ends, and those ends were opaque even to Aban, who had made fortunes on his ability to see the desires in others' hearts. The Damaja had some unknown power over Aman, but it was tenuous. He was Shar Damaka. Damating or no, if he commanded it, the people would not hesitate to tear her apart to please him. Aban knew better than to come between them, of course. He had survived too long to make so foolish a mistake. The moment Anevera sensed his disloyalty to her, she would crush him like a scorpion beneath her sandal, and not even Aman could stop it. Aban was as far beneath the Damaja as she was below Aman. Farther. The only man who can truly handle a woman is a woman, Aban's father had said to him many times before he died. It was good advice. Leisha Paper would shake the very foundations of Anevera's power, perhaps freeing Aman of her entirely. And the best part was, the Damaja would never see Aban's hand in it. Aban's smile widened. Aban was pleased to learn Ernie was as formidable a haggler in person as he had been through his messengers. Aban had contempt for anyone who could not haggle. He excluded only Aman from that rule, because it was less that Aman could not haggle than that he would not. The result was a fair price, but after Aban tripled it, as Aman had commanded, it was a sizable sum. Ernie and his wife seemed quite pleased as Aban counted out the gold.
Stock's all here.
Ernie put the box of Leisha's flower-pressed paper on the counter and lifted off the lid. Aban ran his fingers lightly over the top sheet of the colorful paper, feeling the imprint of the artfully arranged flowers embedded in the weave.
Still smells sweet after all this time.
Keep it dry and it will last forever. Or close enough for mortal men.
Your daughter seems touched by Everim. Perfect in every way. Like a heavenly seraph.
She is.
My master would like to purchase her as a bride. He has empowered me to negotiate her dower, and will be most generous.
How generous?
It doesn't matter. Leisha isn't for sale like some horse.
Oh, of course, of course. Please forgive my poor sense of words. Your language eludes me at critical times, it seems. I meant no offense. My master understands that your daughter leads your tribe and is not some common piece of merchandise. He intends her and your tribe great honor, mingling your blood with his own. At his side, your daughter would be first of all the women in the north, and wield influence in both the deliverer's court and bed to prevent unnecessary bloodshed as my master comes north.
Is that a threat? Are you saying your master will come kill us to take her if I don't sell her to you?
Oh, please, my friend, let us begin again. My master makes no threats and wishes to give no offense. Among our people, it is the father's duty to arrange the marriages of his daughters. Part of the arrangement is that the groom's family provide the father and bride with dower symbolic of her value. I was given to understand that northerners shared this custom.
We do.
Some folk might do that sort of thing, but that's not how I raise my Leisha. Your master wants to marry my girl, he'll have to court her just like anybody else. And if she decides she wants him, then he can come and ask my blessing on it.
I will make your terms clear to my master. I expect he will begin to court your daughter immediately.
Ow!
Ilona dug her nails into his arm most unsubtly. Abba noted the move with interest. His wives were by no means docile, but they would never dare unman him so in front of a customer.
Yeah, ain't hurting anyone. He comes bringing flowers. You said yourself it's Leisha's choice.
Ernie looked at her a long moment, then nodded. He took the box cover and slipped it back over Leisha's paper.
It's a heavy box. You want me to get a boy to carry it for you?
Please.
I think the boys are all busy, and I could use the stroll. I'll carry the paper.
Again, Abin was confused. In Krasia, it was expected that women do such labor, but from the way Ernie goggled at his wife, Abin could tell he was shocked. As they walked down the isolated path from Ernie's shop, Abin turned to her.
I pray to ever my misunderstanding of your ways gave you and your husband no lasting offense.
Oh, we ain't much different from you. Only here, fathers approve marriages, but mothers arrange them. Ernie ain't blessing anything until the dower's set.
Abin stopped short, finally understanding.
Of course. I regret that my master's mother, Kajiva, is still in Evram's bounty with his wives. May I negotiate in her stead?
He has other wives?
Of course. Aman Jardir is the Shardram Akha.
Tell him if he's wise, he'll never so much as mention his other wives to my daughter. Girl gets jealous like a thundercloud.
I will be sure to advise him. Thank you. I assume your daughter is a virgin?
Of course she is.
Oh, please, take no offense. In Krasia, a man's first wife will inspect prospective brides personally. But if that is not your custom, your word will suffice.
It sure is the core ain't our custom to let anyone but husbands and herb gatherers look between our legs. So don't you or your master go getting any ideas about sampling the milk.
Of course.
Jardir paced his pavilion like an animal waiting for Abin to return.
What did he say? Is it done?
No. Mistress Leisha is more like Damating than I thought. She has liberty to choose her own husband, though you must still pay a dower for her father's blessing.
I will pay any price.
So you have said. But I, your humble servant, have nevertheless begun negotiations to minimize the impact on your treasury.
So I may approach her directly?
Her father has given you permission to court her.
Jardir smiled, snatching up his spear and pausing to check himself in a silvered mirror.
What will you say to her?
I have no idea. But this is Evram's will, so I trust that whatever I say will be the right thing.
I do not think it works that way, Aman.
Jardir looked at Abin, knowing all the words unspoken. Abin was much like the Parchin in that regard, polite, tolerant, and utterly disbelieving. Jardir looked at his old friend and felt great pity in his heart, understanding at last what it meant to be Kafit. Evram did not speak to them. Abin might use the Creator's name in every other sentence, but had never truly heard his voice or felt the rapture of submitting to his divine will. Only Prophet spoke to Abin, and he would ever be its slave. But that, too, was part of Evram's plan, for the Kafit saw things no other man did, things essential to Jardir if he was to win Sharakah. Jardir put a hand on Abin's shoulder, smiling sadly.
I know you do not, my friend, but if you do not trust in the Creator, hold faith in me.
Of course. But at the very least, avoid mention of your other wives. Her mother tells me that Mistress Leisha's jealousy is like a storm.
Jardir nodded, not surprised in the least that such a woman would know her own worth and expect other women to make way for her. It only made him want her more. Back in the hollow, Roger looked up to see the Krasian leader approaching, followed by his two bodyguards, Hasik and Shanjat. They wore their spears and shields on their backs, but while Jardir looked relaxed and serene, the warriors had the look of men surrounded by enemies, their hands flexed unconsciously for want of a spear. Jardir headed for Roger, and Garrod and a few cutters hurried to intercept. Jardir's bodyguards whirled to face them, spear and shield appearing in their hands instantly. The cutters lifted their own weapons at the sight, and it seemed a clash was inevitable. But Jardir turned, taking in Cutter and Sharam alike.
We are guests of Mistress Leisha. No blood will be shed between our peoples until she decrees otherwise.
Then tell your men to put their spears down.
His bodyguard sheathed their spears, though they kept their shields out.
Didn't say put them away, I said put them down.
Guests are not asked to leave their knives at the door, Garrett, son of Steve.
Garrett opened his mouth to reply, but Roger cut him off.
Of course, you are correct. Put up your axe.
Garrett's eyes widened. It was the first time Roger had ever publicly given Garrett an order, and it was one the cutter might well refuse to accept, for if he put up his weapon, every other cutter would do so as well. Their eyes met, and Garrett challenged him in that look, but Roger was a mummer, and his face easily imitated the harsh look of the warded man.
I'm not going to tell you again, Garrett.
Garrett nodded and stepped back, returning his axe to its harness and his blade to its sheath. The other cutters looked at him in surprise, but they did the same, taking comfort in their numbers. Roger turned to face Jardir.
Is there something I can help you with?
Indeed. I wish to speak with Mistress Leisha.
She's not in town.
I see. Can you tell me where I might find her?
The core we will.
Why?
She has given me a gift of incredible value in the cloak. I wish to bestow a gift of equal value upon her.
What gift?
That is a matter between Mistress Leisha and myself.
I'll take you to her if you leave your warriors behind.
Of course. My intentions toward Mistress Leisha are honorable, and I will of course accept a chaperone while in her presence.
It seemed an odd choice of words, but Roger could not find further cause to argue. Soon they were walking the path to Leisha's cottage. Garrett insisted on coming along and glared at Jardir the whole way, though the Krasian leader seemed thankfully oblivious.
Why does the mistress not live in your village's wondrous great ward? I would think her too valuable to risk to the Alagai.
If all the core rose up tonight, you'd be safer in Leisha's cottage than anywhere else in the world.
Jardir found that hard to believe, but as they came close to the cottage, he found the path laid with a walkway of stone wards, each large enough to stand upon without marring it. Jardir stopped short, looking at the stones in amazement. He squatted, pressing against the stone with his hand.
Evram's beard! It must have taken 1,000 slaves to carve these.
We ain't a bunch of filthy desert slavers like you.
Jardir's first impulse was to kill the man, but that was no way to impress the mistress. He embraced the insult instead and gave it no further thought, returning his focus to the path.
The wards were poured, not carved, made from a mixture of stone and water called crete, which hardens as it dries. Leisha cut them into the ground herself, and free men poured the stone.
These are combat wards, and linked.
Any demon that sets foot on this path might as well step into a sunbeam.
Jardir realized he had been arrogant and naive to scoff before. For all their savage ways, not even Sharik Hora held the power of some of the northern woman's wardings. The yard was no less stunning, filled with more crete walkways that wove a complex ward net around the cottage and its environs. A large garden bloomed brightly, the herbs and flowers arranged in neat groupings, their lines forming yet more wards. Jardir couldn't recognize many of them, but he saw enough to know that these did far more than banish or kill corlings. Stronger than ever, he felt Everam's will thrumming within him. This woman was destined to be his bride. With her and Anevra behind him, what in the world could he not accomplish? Leisha listened to the comforting rhythm of Wanda chopping firewood as she prepared lunch. The simple task helped give her mind clarity as she went over the night's events and compared the men she had met with the tales of the refugees and Arlen's words of warning. It was not that she did not trust the accounts, but Leisha preferred to form her own opinions. Many of the refugees spoke hearsay and exaggeration, and Arlen's heart could be hard and unforgiving at times. Something had happened to him in Krasia, some hurt done he could not forgive. But since he would not speak of it, Leisha could only guess as to what it was. Whatever else might be true of the Krasians, they were warriors without equal. Leisha had seen that instantly as she watched them fight. The cutters were generally larger and more heavily muscled, but they moved with none of the precision that marked the Dalsharim. The 50 camped in the clearing could cut a swath of destruction across the hollow before they were pulled down, and if the rest of Jardir's army had half their skill, the hollowers would stand little chance against them, even with all the secrets of fire she could muster. And so she had determined that they must not fight, if it could be avoided. It was one thing to kill demons, but every human life was precious. The books of the old world said mankind had once numbered in the billions, but how many remained after the return? 250,000? The thought of the last men in the world fighting one another sickened her. Yet neither could she surrender, She would not spit on her hand and wet the hollow for the Krasians. She had worked too hard to hold the hollowers together after the flux to assimilate the refugees from Ryzen and Lacton to just turn them over. If there was a way to negotiate a peace, she had to find it. The first meeting with the Krasian leader had seemed to indicate that was a possibility. He was cultured and intelligent, nothing like the rabid animal the accounts had portrayed, and clearly held true to his beliefs, even if Leisha thought them brutal and cruel at times. She had looked deeply into his eyes, and there was no cruelty there. Like a stern father administering a needed spanking, Aman Jadir was doing what he thought best for humanity. Leisha paused in her work, realizing that the chopping outside had stopped. She looked up as the door opened and Wanda stood in the threshold.
Wash up and set the table. Lunch will be another few minutes.
Begging your pardon, mistress, but Roger and Garrett are here to see you.
Tell them to come in and set another pair of places at the table.
They're not alone.
Leisha set her knife on the cutting board and toweled her hands clean as she went to the door. Aman Jardir stood on her front porch, standing calmly and ignoring the way Garrett glared at him. He wore a fine white robe over his warrior blacks, matching the white turban his crown nestled within. Leisha's eyes danced across its wards, but she forced herself not to stare. She dropped her gaze to his eyes, but that was far worse, for they bored into her with such intensity that she felt as if he could see her very soul.
Forgive my appearing unannounced, mistress.
You just say the word and I'll haul him back to where he came from, Leisha.
Nonsense! Welcome. Wanda and I were just about to sit down to lunch. Would you care to join us?
I would be honored and delighted.
Jardir followed Leisha into the cottage, pausing to remove his sandals and leave them by the door. Leisha noted that even his feet were covered in ward scars. A kick from him would likely do as much to a Corling as one by the warded man. The meal Mistress Leisha had prepared was a meatless stew served with fresh bread and cheese. Jardir bowed his head as she invoked a blessing over the food, and then everyone began eating at once. He began to lift his bowl to drink when he noticed the Greenlanders were leaving theirs on the table, using some sort of tool to bring the food to their lips. He glanced at his own setting and saw a similar utensil there, a wooden strip with a depression at the end. He looked at Leisha and mirrored her actions as he tasted the stew. It was delicious, with heavy vegetables he had never tasted. He began to eat more vigorously, using the thick Greenland bread to soak the last drops from his bowl as he saw Garrett and Wanda do.
Exquisite. We do not have such food in Krasia.
There is much we could learn from each other, if we can find a way to live in peace.
Peace, mistress? There is no such thing on Allah. Not while the Alagai hold the night and men cower before them.
So the tales are true. You mean to conquer us and levy our people for Sharak Ka?
Why should I wish to conquer you? Your people are humble before the Creator, stand tall in the night, and shed blood in Alagai Sharak alongside my warriors. That makes you Evesian, though you know it not.
It don't! We ain't got nothing to do with you filthy—
Garrett Cutter! You'll keep a polite tongue at my table, or I'll give it such a dose of pepper you can't talk for a month.
Garrett recoiled, and again Jardir was amazed at the power of the woman. She made the Damating seem timid.
I apologize, Aman.
Leisha seemed taken aback when he smiled brightly at her.
What did I say?
My name.
I'm sorry, was that improper of me?
On the contrary. It sounds beautiful, coming from your lips.
With no veil to cover her cheeks, Jardir saw how her pale skin reddened at his words. He had never courted a woman before, but it seemed as if Evrim himself guided his words.
More than 3,000 years ago, my ancestor Khaji ruled this land from the southern sea to the frozen waste.
So the histories say. The 3,000 years is a long time, and accounts can become blurred?
Perhaps here in the north. But the Temple of Sharikhora in the Desert Spear has stood that long and more, and our records are sharp. Khaji did rule this land, sometimes by the spear, and sometimes by building alliance with its tribes and sealing it with blood. Khaji's blood is still strong here. Even your name, Deliverer's Hollow, honors him. You are not Chin to be conquered, but lost brethren to be welcomed into our fold. I name you Hollow Tribe, and accord you all the rights therein.
What rights?
Jardir reached into his robe, producing his personal Evesia. Its cover was of supple leather embossed with wards, and its pages were gilded in gold. A red ribbon hung ready to mark a page. The pages were soft and thin from daily use.
These rights.
He gave her the volume. Leisha took the book as one who knew its value, and he recalled she was a bookbinder's daughter as she turned it to examine the spine. She pushed her bowl aside and spread the cloth from her lap over the table before laying the book upon it and paging through.
It's beautiful. But much as I would love to learn the language, I'm afraid I can't understand a word.
She closed the book and held it out to him.
Keep it. What better book to help you learn? You may find its truths more in line with your own beliefs than you imagine.
Oh, I couldn't. This is too precious.
You give me a cloak that rivals Kaji's own, and you balk at a book of his truths? I can pen another.
You pen this yourself?
In my own blood, during the years I studied it in Sharikora.
Leisha's eyes widened.
It is not gold or jewels, I understand. I would shower them upon you if I could, but I brought no such trinkets north. This is the most valuable thing I own, apart from my crown, spear, and new cloak. I hope you will accept it while Aban negotiates a proper dower with your mother.
Dower?
Of course. Your father gave me permission to court you, and your mother will see your prices met. Did they not tell you?
No, they correspond didn't.
Leisha rose to her feet so fast her chair skidded out behind her. In an instant, everyone was on their feet. Jardir felt a sudden flash of fear. He had given offense to her, but without understanding how, he could not even apologize.
Son of the core!
Garrett swung his meaty fist across the table at Jardir. Jardir caught Garrett's wrist and pivoted, pulling him clear across the table and flipping him onto his back. He put a single toe into Garrett's throat.
Your betters are speaking, Sharam. I have tolerated your constant rudeness out of respect to Mistress Leisha, but if you try to lay hands on me again, I will tear your arm off.
Everyone looked to Leisha for how to react.
Serves you right, Garrett Cutter. No one asked you to attack anyone in my home. Out with you. Roger and Wanda, too. You can all wait in the yard.
The core we will. If you think we're leaving you alone with this...
There was a bang and a flash at their feet, and they jumped in shock. Leisha said nothing, but her face was a storm cloud as she pointed at the door. Both were gone in an instant. Jardir released Garrett, and he, too, scurried out. Jardir turned to Leisha and bowed long and deep.
I apologize, Mistress, though I do not understand why I have given distress. I have come to you and your family honorably, yet you act as if I tried to carry you off after stealing a well.
Leisha did not respond for a long time, and her anger was terrible to behold, such that Jardir had an urge to shield his eyes as if in a sandstorm. Slowly, she embraced the feeling, and her features grew calm once more.
I apologize as well. My distress is not directed at you, but at being the last to find out you had come courting.
Aban told your parents I would come immediately. I assume they sent you word.
I believe you. My mother has a history of trying to make such arrangements without my knowledge.
If you need time to consider, you need not answer now.
Yes. I mean, no. That is, I'm flattered, but I can't marry you.
Why not? Your mother says you are unspoken for, and I will meet any dower your family desires. Soon I will control all the Northland, and you with me. What husband could offer you more?
It doesn't matter. I barely know you. Dowers mean nothing to me, and frankly, I don't know that I want you controlling anything.
Come with me to Evrim's Bounty. Come see my people and what we are building. I will teach you our language as you asked, and you can come to know me and decide what I am worthy to control.
Leisha looked at him a long time, but Jardir waited patiently, knowing her answer was in Evera.
All right, but with proper chaperone and no decision until I am safely returned to the Hollow.
Of course. I swear it by Evrim.
Roger paced the yard, staring at Leisha's cottage. Garrett's clenched fists were like two hams, and even Wanda had fetched and strung her bow. Finally, the door opened, and Leisha followed Jardir out onto the porch.
Wanda, escort Mr. Jardir back to town. Garrett, you can finish cording the woodpile.
Garrett picked up Wanda's axe as she and Jardir headed down the path. Roger looked at Leisha, who nodded her head back to the door. She went inside, and he followed as she went right to Bruna's rocker and put on her shawl. Never a good sign.
How did he take your refusal?
He didn't. Told me to take my time and think it through.
He's invited me back to Risen with him.
You can't go!
You have no more say over who I marry than my mother, Roger.
Are you saying you want to marry him? After a single tea and an awkward lunch?
Of course not. I have no intention of accepting his proposal.
Then why in the Corps would you deliver yourself into his hands?
There's an army at our doorstep, Roger. You don't see the value in looking at them through our own eyes? Counting tents and learning how their leader thinks?
Not at the cost of our own leader! Duke Reinbeck doesn't personally go to Milne to see what Euchre's up to. He sends spies.
I don't have any spies.
You have over 1,000 Risonians who owe you their lives, many of whom left behind families. Surely a few could be persuaded to return home and keep their ears open.
I won't order people to put themselves at risk.
But you'll put yourself.
I don't think Amon would harm me.
2 days ago, he was the demon of the desert. Now he's Amon? What, do you just shine on any man who thinks he's the deliverer?
I don't want to hear any more of this, Roger.
I don't care what you want! You've heard how the Cretans treat women. No matter what that oily snake tells you, the moment you're out of range of the Hollower's bows, you'll be his property, and anyone with you will get a spear in the eye.
So you won't be coming with me?
Knight, haven't you heard anything I've been saying?
Every word, but I'm still going. If that's the kind of man Amon is, then war is inevitable, and it doesn't matter what we do. But if there's even a chance he meant what he said at the table, then there's a chance we can find a way to coexist without killing each other. And that's worth more to the world than the fate of Leisha Paper.
When do we leave?
The warded man's mood was black as Fort Milne receded in the distance. Any happiness he had felt upon leaving Reagan and Alyssa's manse was swept away by the meeting with Jake. The conversation played out over and over in his mind. All the words he should have said presented themselves too late and did little to dispel a nagging doubt that his friend was right. To take his mind away, he read through the book Ronald had given him, but that brought no comfort. Laid bare were Leisha's coveted secrets of fire, with metalwork diagrams to turn their force into tools of precision killing. Tools designed for killing not demons, but men.
Did the Corlings drive us to the brink of extinction, or did we do it to ourselves?
He caught the sight of a ruined keep off the side of the road as the sun began to set. One of Euchre's predecessors had kept a garrison there, but the keep had fallen to demons and never been rebuilt. Most messengers, convinced it was haunted, gave it a wide berth. A rusted gate hung bent and torn from twisted moorings, and great holes had been broken in the outer wall. He rode into the keep, stalking Twilight Dancer in a warded circle. He stripped to his loincloth, selecting a spear and bow. As darkness fell, the stinking mists began to seep up between the shattered stones of the courtyard. Corlings rose thickly in unwarded ruins, instinct telling them the odds were good, prey might one day return. 50 men had died when the wards of this keep fell, likely killed by the very demons rising now. They deserved vengeance. The warded man waited until the demon spotted him and charged before lifting his bow. When he was out of arrows, he charged with spear and shield, eventually abandoning that as well and fighting with bare hands and feet. Lost in the killing frenzy, he thought of nothing else until at last, covered in demon ichor that sizzled on his wards, he found no more demons to kill. The sky began to lighten soon after, the few remaining Corlings in the area fading into mist to flee the sun as it burned their taint away from the surface world. But then, the light reached him, and it was like fire on his skin. The glare stung his eyes, leaving him dizzy and nauseous, and his throat burned. Standing before it was agony. This had happened before. Leisha said it was the sunlight burning the excess magic away from him, but there was another part of him, a primal part, that knew the truth. The sun was rejecting him. He was becoming a demon, and no longer belonged on the surface of the world. The core called to him, beckoning with offers of succor. The paths, like vents of magic coming up from the ground, were unmistakable to his warded eyes, and they all sang the same song. No sun would burn him in the core's embrace. The warded man started to dematerialize, slipping a bit of his essence down along a path, tasting it.
Just once, to probe for weakness, to see if the fight can be taken there.
It was a noble thought, if not entirely true. More likely, he would be destroyed.
World's better off without me anyway.
But before he could melt away, there was a pop and a flash of light as one of the smoldering bodies in the yard was caught in a sunbeam and burst into flame. He looked over at it, watching the bodies ignite one after another like festival flame work. Even as the Corlings burned, his own pain lessened. The sun left him weakened, as it always did, but it did not destroy him.
Yet, but soon. Best give the brook its wards while you still can.
Landmarks began to appear as the warded man drew closer to Tibbet's brook, bringing his mind, lingering on thoughts of the Corps, back to the present. Here was the messenger cave where he had succored with Reagan and Kieran. There were the ruins where they had found him. Those, at least, were free of demons. A pack of night wolves had taken up residence there, and the warded man wisely gave them a wide berth. Even Corlings thought twice before disturbing a pack of night wolves. Centuries of demons culling the smallest and weakest had left the few remaining predators in the wild formidable indeed. Named after their jet-black fur, adult night wolves could weigh 300 pounds, and a pack of them could take down even a wood demon if cornered. Next along the road came the small clearing where he had crippled one arm. The warded man had expected the place to be just as he had left it, a scorched and blackened ruin surrounding the clear spot where he had built his circle. But it had been better than 14 years, and that bleak place now bloomed with rich life, brighter even than its surroundings. It might be a good omen, if he believed in such things. In a far-flung hamlet such as Tibbet's Brook, a messenger or any stranger, even someone from Sunny Pasture the next town over, was a rare thing and apt to draw attention. When the warded man drew close to the town too early in the day, he pulled up and waited. Better to pass through the outskirts and town proper late in the day when folk were busy checking their wards rather than washing the road. He would arrive in town square close to dusk with just enough time to rent a room at Hogg's Tavern. Come morning, all he would have to do was find the town speaker and give him or her a grimoire of battle wards, handing out a few weapons to those who wanted them in the process, and then leave before half the folk even knew he was there. He wondered if Celia still spoke for the town as she had when he was young. The first farm he passed was Mac Pasture's, but though he heard animals in the barn, he didn't see anyone. He reached Harl's not long after. The Tanner farm was deserted entirely. Recently, it seemed, since its wards were still intact and the fields unburned. But the livestock was gone, and the fields in disarray as if they had not been properly tended in some time. There was no sign of a demon attack. He wondered what could have happened. Harl's farm had special meaning for him. For 11 years, Harl's farm was the farthest he had ever gotten from home, but more than that, it was where he had kissed Benny and Renna the night before his mother died. It was ironic. He could no longer remember his mother's face, but he remembered everything about those kisses. The way his teeth had clinked clumsily with Benny's, and they had both recoiled in shock. The softness and warmth of Renna's mouth, the taste of her breath. It had been a long time since he had thought of Renna Tanner. Their fathers had promised them to each other, and if Arlen had not run away, they would likely be married now, raising children and tending Jeff's farm. He wondered what had become of her. Things only grew stranger as he went on. There was no reason for him to have taken any caution with his approach, because he didn't see a single soul on his way through the brook. Every home was locked up tight. He mentally checked the date, but it was too early for the summer solstice festival. They must have been summoned by the Great Horn. The Great Horn was in town square and was blown when there was an attack, giving directions so that those closest could come and help search for survivors and rebuild if possible. Folk would lock up their livestock and leave for that, sometimes even overnight. The warded man knew he had judged his people harshly when he left home. They were no different from the folk of Cutter's Hollow or any other of dozens of hamlets he had seen. Brook folk might not stand up to the Corlings like Crasians, but they resisted in their own way, coming together time and again to reaffirm their bonds to one another. When they bickered, it was over petty things. No one in the brook would allow a neighbor to go hungry or be left without succor, as happened so often in the cities. The warded man searched the sky, but there was no sign of smoke, the surest indicator of attack. He strained his ears, but there was nothing to guide him, and after some casting about, he headed on down the road to town square. There would be folk there who could tell him about the... It was nearly dark as he approached town square, and the buzz of hundreds of people came to his ears. He relaxed, realizing his fears were unfounded, and wondered what occasion could have drawn everyone in the brook to spend a night in town. Had one of Hogg's daughters finally married? The streets were clear, but it seemed all the brook had gathered. Every porch and doorway and window facing the square was packed full of people. Some, like the watches, had even drawn their own circles, standing apart from the others and clutching their cannons deep in prayer. It was a sharp contrast with the folk from Boggins Hill, clutching only one another as they wept. He caught sight of Renna's sister Benny among them, holding tight to Lucas Boggan. He followed their gaze to the square's center, where a beautiful young woman was bound to a stake in the ground, and the sun was setting. It was only an instant before the warded man recognized Renna Tanner. Perhaps it was because she had been on his mind, or that he had just seen her sister, but Renna's round face, even after so long, was unmistakable, as was the long brown hair that fell nearly to her waist. She hung limply, held up more by the ropes wrapped around her arms and chest than her own strength. Her eyes were open, but they stared blankly, focused on nothing.
What in the core is going on?
The giant stallion leapt forward into the square, digging great divots in the grass as he pranced before the shocked crowd. The square was lit with a dim, flickering glow from torches and lanterns, but above, the sky was a deep purple. The corlings would rise in seconds. He leapt from the horse's back, rushing to the stake to undo Renna's bonds. An old man strode out to him, waving a large hunting knife with a stained blade. The warded man's sharp nostrils caught the scent of dried blood as he recognized Radek Laurie, the speaker from Fishing Hole.
This ain't your affair, messenger. That girl killed my kin, as well as her own die, and we aim to see her court for it.
The warded man glanced at Renna in shock, and like a slap in the face, it all came back to him. The marriage game she and Benny had wanted to play with him in the hayloft. Games they said they learned from watching Elaine with their father. Elaine's secret, pleading words to Jeff, begging him to take her away. The grunting from Harl's room deep in the night. The memories flooded back, but this time he saw them as a grown man and not a naive boy. Horror struck him, followed quickly by anger. He reached out faster than Radek could react, catching the man's wrist in a Sharasak twist that flipped him to the ground, even as the knife came free from his hands.
If Renna Tanner kill her die, then I tell you he had it coming.
He moved to cut Renna's bonds, but several fishers led by Garrick charged him with their thin spears. He stuck the bloody knife in the stake and turned to meet them. To call it a fight would have been overly kind to the fishers.
Ain't nobody getting cored while I'm around. I'm taking her, and there ain't a corresponding thing you can do about it.
Arlen's eyes widened in disbelief. Georgie Watch stood there, looking much as he had the last time the warded man had seen him, though that had been over 16 years gone, and Georgie in his 90s then.
Nothing we can do, maybe, but reckon we're not the ones you need to contend with, boy. The plague take you both.
The warded man followed the stick and saw he was right. Mist was rising throughout the square, and already some corlings were solidifying. The fishers on the ground scrambled back behind the wards. Georgie Watch had a grim smile on his face, one of righteous satisfaction, but the warded man didn't flinch. Instead, he pulled off his hood and met the South Watchtender's eyes.
I've contended with worse, old man.
He stripped off his robe as well. As always, the first to come were the flame demons. One leapt at Renna, but the warded man caught its tail, hurling it across the square. A wood demon formed next, charging Twilight Dancer, but the stallion reared and trampled it. The warded man pivoted in time to grab the diving wind demon and turn its momentum against it, throwing it hard to the ground and crushing its throat with a stomp of his foot. Two more wood demons came at him, and he kicked the first in the stomach, knocking it back before grappling with the other. He caught one of its arms in a Sharasak hold and pulled with all his strength, tearing the demon's arm clear off. This he threw at Georgie Watch, though the limb bounced off the wards of the South Watch Tender's circle. Some people even fell to their knees, but the warded man only scowled.
I ain't here to deliver anyone that would put a girl out into the night!
Arlen turned to Renna, pulling the knife free from the stake and slashing through her bonds. She collapsed into his arms, and their eyes met for just a moment. Focus returned to Renna's gaze, and she shook her head as if to clear it. He lifted her up onto Twilight Dancer's back.
That witch killed my son.
The warded man turned, remembering all too clearly the many beatings he'd suffered at Kobe Fisher's hands as a child.
Your son was a bully, and never worth a Carling's piss.
He looked out over the crowd, scanning the terrified faces. He saw his father there clutching Elaine Tanner and felt another surge of anger. Nothing had changed if Jeff could stand there and watch Ren estate, knowing what they both did of Harl.
I came to teach you all to fight the Korlings, but I see Tibbetts Brooks still only raises cowards and fools.
He turned to ride off, but something gnawed at him, and he looked back, giving the crowd one last glance, one last chance.
Any man, woman, or child who would rather kill Korlings than feed them their neighbor, meet me here at dusk tomorrow. If not, correspond the lot of you.
Jeff met his eyes then, though there was no recognition in his gaze.
Renna Tanner is my kin. Sucker at my farm up the north road. Renna knows the way.
The warded man needed no direction to Jeff's farm, but he nodded, turning Twilight Dancer north.
Here now, you can't go sheltering that murdering witch, Jeff Bales. The council voted.
Then it's best I ain't on the council, because the night is my witness. You or anyone else comes to my farm looking for her, there'll be more bloodshed and to spare.
Huh.
The warded man kicked Twilight Dancer into a gallop out of the square and headed up the road to his father's farm. Renna was silent the whole ride, resting against him and clinging to his robes. A few demons came at them, but Twilight Dancer dodged and put on speed, quickly leaving them behind. His father's farm was much as he remembered it, though an addition had been built onto the back of the house. Some of the ward posts in the barley field were still those he had carved himself, coated in fresh lacquer many times over the years. Jeff maintained his wards religiously, a habit he had instilled in his son that had saved Arlen's life many times since and defined much of the course of his life. Drawn to the house, a great many Korlings were in the yard testing the wards. The warded man shot two to clear the way to the barn, and once safe behind its wards, he stabled Twilight Dancer and stood in the doorway, picking off the others one by one with his bow. Soon, the way was clear, and he escorted Renna to the house proper. The warded man was shaking as he deposited Renna in the common room and lit the lanterns, kindling a fire in the hearth. Everything about the place was so familiar, it made his heart ache. It even smelled the same. He half expected his mother to come out of the cold room and tell him to wash for supper. He went over to Renna, who was sitting right where he left her, playing with her skirts.
You all right?
And sure I'll ever be all right again.
Yeah, I know the feeling. You hungry?
When she nodded, he went to the cold room, unsurprised to find it laid out just as he recalled. There was smoked ham and fresh vegetables and bread in the bread box. He took everything to the chopping block and filled a pot from the water barrel. He soon had a stew simmering over the fire, filling the house with its aroma. Renna said little as they ate, and he found himself staring at her, wishing he knew what words could put life back in her eyes.
Good stew. There's more if you like.
She nodded, and he fetched the pot from the fire, ladling her another helping.
Thanks. I feel like I haven't eaten days. I haven't really. I've been hungry.
You had a rough week, I imagine.
You killed those demons. Killed them with your bare hands.
That's right.
Why?
I need a reason to kill demons.
But they told you what I'd done. And he's right. None of this would have happened. I just minded my dad. Maybe I deserve to be cored.
You listen to me, Renna Tanner. Your dad didn't deserve minding. I know what he'd done to you and your sisters out on that farm. That kind of man ain't worth no mind at all. It's him that brought these troubles about, not you. And I ain't never been you.
When she just stared at him, he shook her.
You hear me?
For a moment more, Renna just stared. And then slowly she nodded. And then again, more decisively.
Wasn't right, what he done to us.
That's undersaid.
And poor Kobe never done nothing wrong. He wasn't no bully. At least not that I ever saw. All he ever wanted was to marry me proper. And Dad?
Killed him for it.
Man like that ain't much more than a demon himself.
And you got to fight demons, Renna Tanner. It's the only way to live with your head held high. Can't trust no one else to do what you won't do for yourself.
Renna was curled up by the fire, fast asleep, when Jeff's cart pulled into the yard early the next morning. The warded man watched through the window, swallowing a lump in his throat as four children hopped down from the back of the cart, brothers and sisters he had never known. They were followed off the cart by tough old Noreen and Elaine. The warded man had shined on Elaine when he was young, and she was still beautiful now, but seeing his father help her down from the front seat, the way he used to do for his mother, gnawed at him. He didn't blame Elaine for wanting to escape Harald's, not anymore at least, but that made it no easier to see how quickly she had taken his mother's place. He looked up the road, but there was no sign of anyone else following. He opened the door and went out to meet them. The children pulled up short, staring as he walked over to Jeff.
She's asleep by the fire.
Thank you, messenger.
I'll hold you to your promise to protect her from any looking to do her harm.
I will.
The warded man's eyes narrowed. Jeff was full of sincere-sounding promises. Ones he meant full well, yet when the time came for action, he was apt to fail.
I'll fetch my horse and go.
Wait, please.
Jeff caught his arm. The warded man looked at the offending hand, and Jeff snatched it quickly away.
We'd like it if you stayed for breakfast. Least we can do. Whole town might be at the square come evening, like you said. You can take your ease here till then.
The warded man looked at him, wanting to be gone from the place, but a part of him longed to meet his siblings, and his stomach rumbled at the thought of a proper brook breakfast. Such things had meant little to him when he was a child, but now they were cherished memories.
Reckon I can set a spell.
He allowed himself to be escorted back inside as the children ran to their chores and Noreen and Elaine headed to the cold room.
This here is Jeff Young.
Jeff introduced his oldest son when they were gathered around the breakfast table. The boy nodded at him, but mostly stared at his tattooed hands and tried to peek into the shadows of his hood.
Next to him is Jenny Taylor. They've been promised near 2 seasons. At the end are our youngest, Sylvie and Charlie.
Seated opposite the children, next to Renna and Noreen, the warded man scoffed at the names, those of his lost mother and uncle.
You have beautiful children.
Tender Harold says you're the deliverer. Come again.
Well, I ain't. Just a messenger, come to spread a good word.
Messengers all like you now, then? All warded up?
I'm one of a kind like that, but I'm just a man all the same. Didn't come to deliver anyone.
You sure did for our Renna. Can't thank you enough for that.
Shouldn't have had to.
You're right at that. Sometimes when a body's in the crowd, and the crowd has its say...
Stop making excuses, Jeff Bales. Man's right. What do we got in this world except kith and kin? Ain't nothing should keep us from standing by him.
The warded man looked at her. This wasn't the Noreen he remembered, the one who had stood on the porch the night his mother was cored, stood and done nothing except try to keep Arlen from going to her aid. He nodded, his eyes flicking back to meet Jeff's.
She's right. You got to stand up to those that would harm you and yours.
You sound like my son.
Say again.
Me?
Jeff shook his head at his oldest son.
Your elder. Had another son. Name of Arlen years back. Promised to Renna there, in fact. Arlen's man was cored. He ran off. Always asking about free cities, Arlen was. I'd like to think he might have made it there.
But you have this beautiful family now.
I thank the Creator for him every day. But that don't mean I ain't carrying a weight for those gone before.
After breakfast, the warded man went out to the stables to check on Twilight Dancer, more to escape for a moment than for any need. He had just started to brush the horse down when the barn door opened and Renna came in. She cut an apple and held the halves out for Twilight Dancer to eat, stroking the stallion's flanks when she was done.
It was night when I come running here a few days ago. Demons would have got me if Jeff hadn't crossed the wards and hit one with his axe.
Honest word?
You're not gonna tell him, are you?
Tell him what?
That you're his son? That you're alive and well and you forgive him? He's waited so long. Why are you still punishing him when I can see forgiveness in your eyes?
You know who I am?
Of course I know. It's stupid, no matter what everyone thinks. How would you have known about my dad and what he'd done you weren't Arlen Bales? How would you know Kobe was a bully or which farm was Jeff's? Not you strolled around the cupboards like it was still your house.
Didn't mean for anyone to know.
The warded man suddenly realized that his Brook accent, which he'd dropped while living in Milne, had returned. It was an old messenger's trick to put folk in the hamlets at ease, shifting accent to match theirs. He had done it 100 times, but this time was different. Like he'd been doing the trick since he left and was finally speaking in his own voice again. Renna kicked him hard in the shin.
Ow!
That's for thinking I didn't know and not saying anything.
Renna shoved him so hard he fell into the pile of hay at the back of the stall.
14 summers I waited for you. Always thought you'd come back for me. We was promised. But you didn't come back for me at all, did you? Not even now. He was just gonna stop in and leave me thinking no one knew.
She kicked at him again, and he scrambled quickly to his feet, moving to put Twilight Dancer between them. She was right, of course. The same as his visit to Milne, he had thought he could look in on his old life without touching it, like removing a bandage to see if the wound underneath had healed. But truer was he had left those wounds to fester, and it was time they were bled.
5 minutes talk between our dads don't make us promised, Wren.
I asked my dad to talk to Jeff. I told you we was promised then, and I said the words on the porch at sunset the day you left. That makes it so.
Saying something at sunset doesn't make it so. I never promised to you, Renna. Everyone got to say that night but me.
Maybe you didn't, but I did. It was the only thing I ever done that was really mine, and I ain't gonna take it back. I knew it when we kissed that it was meant to be.
But you'd have married Kobe Fisher, who used to beat on me with his friends.
Well, you fixed him for that. Kobe was always nice to me. I didn't even know you were alive, and I needed to get away.
I know, Wren. I didn't mean it like that. Don't blame you for doing what you did. Just meant that nothing's meant to be. We all just go through life doing what we think's best.
I want to go with you when you leave. That's what I think's best.
You know what that means, Wren? I don't just hide behind a circle when the sun sets. It ain't a safe life.
Like I'm safe here? Even if they don't stake me again as soon as you leave, who I got to turn to now? Who that weren't willing to stand by and watch me get cored?
He looked at her a long time, trying to find the words to refuse her. The Fishers were no different from any bullies. He would cow them come nightfall if he hadn't already. Renna would be safe in the brook. She deserved to be safe. But was simply safety enough? It wasn't for him, so who was he to say it was for her? He'd always looked with derision on those who spent their lives in fear of the night. Being around Renna was like salt in the wound, a reminder of everything he had given up when he began warding his flesh. It was hard enough around those who never knew him before. Renna made him feel like he was still 11 years old. But she needed him, and that kept the call of the core away. Today was the first dawn he had looked forward to since Milne. In his heart, the warded man knew he would never survive if he tried to enter the demon world, but seeing his own people put Renna out at night made him want to leave humanity behind forever. If he left Tibbetts Brook alone, he might.
All right. So long as you keep the pace. You slow me down and I'll leave you at the first town we come to.
Renna looked around the barn, spotting a beam of sunlight streaming in through the hayloft doors above. She stepped carefully into the sunlight and met his eyes.
I ain't gonna slow you.
She drew Harl's knife.
Son is my witness.
You clutch that knife like it could help you against a Corling. Let me ward it for you.
Renna blinked, looking at the knife, then held it out. He reached for it, but she drew it back suddenly, clutching it protectively.
Knife's one of the only things in the world that's mine. I'd like to ward it myself, if you'll teach me.
The warded man looked at her doubtfully, remembering her poor warding when they were children. Renna noted the look and scowled.
I ain't 9 years old anymore, Arlen Bales. Been warding my property nigh 10 years now, and ain't no demon ever got past, so you quit looking down. Reckon I can draw a ripping circle or a heat ward as good as you.
Sorry. The warders in the Free Cities treated me the same way when I left the brook. I forgot how insulting it was.
Renna went over to where his gear was stored and pulled a warded knife from a sheath on his saddle.
Here, what's this one do?
Renna pointed to the single ward at the tip.
Why's the rest of the edge just a repeat of this other ward, only rotated? How's it form a net without connectors?
The warded man pointed to the tip.
This is a piercing ward to break armor. Those on the side are cutting wards to let the blade slide in once the armor's broken. Cutting wards are self-linking if you rotate them proper.
Uh-huh. And these?
Arlen couldn't help but smile. After supper, Jeff hitched his cart and the whole family climbed in to head to town square. Renna rode with the warded man seated behind him on Twilight Dancer. They arrived scant minutes before sunset. If the square had been packed the day before, it was near bursting now. Everyone looked up when they rode in, ignoring Jeff's family entirely as they stared at the hooded stranger on his enormous warded stallion and the girl who rode behind him. The crowd parted as the warded man rode through to the center of the square. Turning Twilight Dancer back and forth a few times so all could see them, he reached up and pulled his hood down.
I came from the Free Cities to teach the good people of Tibbetts Brook to kill demons. But so far, I've seen no good people. Good people, do not feed helpless girls to Corlings. Good people, do not stand by while someone is cored.
She weren't no helpless girl, messenger.
Radic Lowry came to the fore of those from Fishing Hole.
She's a cold killer, and the council voted to have her staked for it.
Aye, they did. And none stood up against them for it.
Folk trust in their speakers.
That true? You folks trust your speakers? Then I reckon it's your speakers I'll test.
Farland leapt down from the horse, and from the harnesses on Twilight Dancer's saddle, selected 10 light spears he stuck point down to stand quivering in the dirt.
Every man or woman of the town council who stands with me and fights tonight, or their heir if they're killed, will get a battle-warded spear, and the secrets of combat warding so they can make their own.
Mac Pasture stepped forward.
Can we have some time to think on it? Don't care to be hasty.
Of course. I'd say you have 10 minutes. By this time tomorrow, I intend to be back on the road to the Free Cities.
Celia Baron came out of the crowd.
You expect us, the Brooks Elders, to stand in the naked night with naught but them spears?
It's a sight more than you gave Rena Tanner.
Not all of us voted her out, messenger.
You let it happen, all the same.
Ain't no one above the law. When the council voted, we had to put the town first, no matter how we felt.
The core with your law, if it says to throw your neighbor to the night. You want to put town first? Come out here and show you can get as you give. Elsewise, I'll take my spears and go.
Celia's eyes narrowed, and then she picked up her skirt, striding firmly into the square, taking up one of the spears. She was followed immediately by Tender Harrell and Brian Broadshoulders. The giant cutter took up his spear with a hungry look in his eyes.
Anyone else have a question?
Reckon I do.
Ask, and I'll answer with honest word, Georgie Watch.
How are we to know you're really the deliverer?
Like I said, Tender, I ain't. Just a messenger.
A messenger of whom?
No patron for this message. Found the wards in a ruin of the old world and took it upon myself to spread them to all the good folk so we can start fighting back.
The plague cannot end without the coming of the deliverer.
But the warded man simply shrugged, handing Georgie a warded spear.
Well, could be it's you. Kill a demon and find out.
Georgie dropped his walking stick and took the weapon, a hard glint in his eyes.
Seen 100 years and more of the plague. Seen everyone I know pass on, even my own grandkin. Always wondered why it was Creator kept me alive so long when he called so many others to his side. Reckon it was on account of me having something left to do.
They say in Fort Crazier that a man can't get to heaven unless he takes a Corlin with him.
Wise folk.
Rusko Hogg stomped into the square next, rolling his sleeves up thick and meaty arms. He grabbed a spear of his own. There was movement from the Marsh contingent, where Corin Marsh sat in a hard-backed chair.
My Doc can't even stand without his cane. Let me fight for him.
Spear's as good a cane as any for a man who thinks he can sit in the council and play Creator.
The warded man ignored the shouts, keeping his eyes on Corin, daring him to step forward. The aged Marsh speaker scowled, but he stood up from his chair and hobbled slowly over to take a spear. He left his cane on the ground beside Georgie's walking stick. The warded man's eyes came to meet a Boggin as she broke an embrace with her son and strode out of the cluster from Boggin's Hill. She looked at Colleen as she passed, but the herb gatherer shook her head.
I got sick to tend, not to mention any of you lucky enough to make it back out of there.
Mac Pasture shook his head as well.
Ain't fool enough to step over them wards. Got folk and livestock depending on me. Didn't come here to be cored.
Let us call a new speaker if this one ain't got the sack.
Why should I? None of you had the sack to stand up for Rena Tanner.
That ain't true.
The warded man turned to Rena in surprise. She met his eyes with a hard look.
Jeff Bales stood in front of a flame demon for me not 5 nights hence.
All eyes turned to Jeff, who shrank under the glare. The warded man felt like Rena had kicked him in the teeth. But his father was under the test now, and he wanted to know the result more than any.
That honest word, Bales. You fight a demon in your yard?
Jeff looked at the ground a long time, then glanced to his children. He seemed to draw strength from the sight, and his back straightened.
You make Jeff Bales speaker before sundown, and I'll let him stand.
The roar of approval was immediate, and Noreen gave Jeff a shove to get him walking. The warded man turned at last to Radic Lowry.
Ain't no proof them spears even work.
You come out on trust, or you don't come out.
Don't know you, messenger. Don't know where you're from or what you believe. Don't know nothing but what you say, and what you say is Fisher's get no justice. So you'll forgive me if I don't entirely trust your word.
Ruddock strode into the square and looked out at not just the Fishers, but other Brook folk as well.
I forgive you.
Harlan pointed to the mist beginning to rise at the speaker's feet.
Now I advise you to either pick up a spear or head back to your wards.
Ruddock Lawry scampered back to the Fishers' wards as fast as his old legs would carry him. The warded man turned to regard the speakers who had stepped forward. They gripped their spears awkwardly, used to holding tools and not weapons. But there was a surprising lack of fear. Except for Jeff, who looked white as a snow demon's scales, they seemed at peace. Speakers didn't question decisions once they were made.
The demons are most vulnerable now, when they're half-formed, if you're quick.
Before he even finished speaking, Hogg strode over to a solidifying wood demon. Hogg yanked the spear back out, letting the now solid demon drop to the ground.
Oh, I could get used to that feeling.
Celia moved next, choosing a flame demon that was beginning to take form. Corrin did the same, stabbing at another forming flame demon the way he might try to spear a frog in the marsh. But his leg buckled, and he threw himself off balance, missing the demon completely. Kevin Marsh ran out into the square. He grabbed one of the two spears still sticking in the dirt and swung it like an axe.
Weren't gonna just let my dad get cored.
The warded man bowed to him.
Good man.
Jeff hurried to stab at a nearby solid flame demon, but he was not quick enough, and it spat flame at him. Jeff held the spear out diagonally as if to block the fire. The shaft of Jeff's spear flared, and the flame was turned into nothing more than a cool breeze. Jeff recovered quickly. A wood demon swept a branch-like arm at him, but the warded man caught its wrist and turned its force against it, flipping it onto its back in front of Georgie Marsh. Tender Harrell and Brian Broadshoulders escorted Mita to her kill, standing ready with their spears in case it should recover itself before she could strike her blow. They needn't have worried. Another wood demon formed, and Brian and Harrell struck it together. The demons were all solid now. A fair number had formed in the square, but more than half were dead, and the wardstones of the crowd prevented reinforcements from coming.
Group close! Spears out ahead of you!
They did as they were told and cornered two wind demons sharing the kills. The warded man calmly guided them around the square, directing kills, ready to step in if needed. But he was not called upon to act again, and the remaining demons were quickly dispatched. The speakers looked around, gripping their spears quite differently now.
Didn't feel so strong in 20 years when I used to split my own firewood.
The warded man looked out at the gathered crowd.
Your elders done it! You remember that the next time there's a demon in your yard!
Ain't no demons left in the square. We done our part of the bargain, so the second part of your payment's due.
Now?
I've a stack of blank vellum we can fill in my back room.
All right.
Hogg bowed and gestured toward his store. The other speakers and the warded man began to head that way, but Hogg turned to face the crowd.
Come morning, I'll be taking orders for warded spears at the general store and hiring folk with a steady warden hand to make them. First come, first served.